We're on.
Alrighty. Well, about that time. A little after that time. So I'll call the meeting to order. And if I can get a motion to approve the minutes.
I make a motion to approve the minutes as submitted.
Hey, Mary.
Alright. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay.
Perfect timing, Mary.
Alrighty, we'll go right into resolutions. So we're gonna start with 91. And this is authorizing the chair of the legislature to enter into an agreement with Awareness.
So I apologize. I'll second it.
Second. Alrighty.
And I'll second it in order to apologize. I had intended, I spoke with Ken Cornell about the changes that we had discussed at our last meeting, and I had intended to do them last week and did them in my head and didn't do them and send them. So I noticed that when I was preparing for today, and so what I've asked Nettie to circulate is one amendment in the resolution itself, and then a couple of resolutions in the professional services and schedules that basically implement what we talked about at the last meeting, which is that what we are intending to fund here is administrative costs related to peer-to-peer educational services. And so that's in red on the resolution 91 in the first resolve, that instead of describing it as counseling services, which requires licensing and things that we're not in a position to be able to oversee, that they would be providing peer-to-peer educational services. I didn't take out at-risk youth, although I think that we could take out at-risk, because I think that some of the major benefit of these services has been to youth who are not yet engaged in risky behaviors. But I also decided that virtually every youth is at risk.
I was just going to say, yeah.
So my proposal would be to change that there. And should I go ahead, Craig, and describe the changes in the...
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So in the professional services, the second whereas basically, again, references their relationship to OASIS, the New York State Office of Alcohol Substance Abuse Services. And it's not necessary, and I don't think the county should be in the role of monitoring that. So it just to delete that doesn't take away anything from them. It just does, it reduces their requirements, if anything. And yet keeps us from being in the role of hiring them for something, or having to watch the boundaries of what they're doing. And in the scope of services, there's similar changes. So in the first, I did take out there who are in need of behavioral support, because then it sounds like they're providing counseling,
yeah,
which we didn't want to contract with them to do. And I did change it to just youths to recognize positive behavioral changes that they can make. And the second item on the scope was that they were promising to do these activities supervised by a mental health counselor. We're not requiring that. We don't have to have that in there in a way that looks like we're then responsible for that aspect of it. And the same with the next one. I just made it engage young people rather than at-risk youth. And in the next one, took out reference to OASIS. So I think these are all friendly amendments. Nothing requires anything more than that we're doing. In fact, it takes away some responsibility.
Kind of makes it cleaner.
Mm-hmm. And that was the idea, is just not have it appear that this is a counseling
provider.
Those
other things wind up being more of a roadblock and a confusing...
It was the point of contention. So, and they're not required for what we want them to be doing, so why not just take them out?
Right.
So I believe if we make those changes here, and I would make a motion for these amendments, both to the resolution and the supporting materials, then they could go to the, get passed out of here and go to the floor and be passed this month.
Just a quick question. So when you take that, is OASIS not required to agency?
It's a good question. I thought about it, but the first part of that clause says that they will provide all services in compliance with federal, state, and local regulations. So if they are required to oversee, then they're still, it's still in here. But it just doesn't single them out and say, it says the firm shall not provide any services for which it does not have a license, certification, or authorization from OASIS, which sounds like a nice thing to say, but I don't think that they actually operate that way. I think they sometimes do kind of go into that boundary. And if they do, and OASIS has a problem with them.
I think they did because they had to. Like, we required it, so.
Right. Yeah, and just kind of contrary to your point, that removing that will put less of a burden on the county to oversee, right? Is that your idea behind it? But mm-hmm. if you actually take out that OASIS isn't required, wouldn't that not put more of a burden for the county to oversee then? Because somebody has to oversee.
What it does is it says we're not contracting for anything that is in OASIS. And it says it that way if that language is in there.
Mm-hmm.
But in it, by it being in there, we're accepting awareness's attestation that they're not doing that. And I don't know whether they're doing it or not. We don't. None of us do, I think. We don't know what they're doing out there. So I don't want to... I mean, I guess I see your point, but that they're promising that they won't maybe is a good thing.
Yeah, because
but
they're not licensed, so if you're expecting them to follow the OASIS requirements and to be overseen by them, then you're somehow recognizing that an unlicensed group is performing a service they really shouldn't be. So if it kind of ventures occasionally, hopefully they're doing it with a certified physician who's capable.
Sure.
But otherwise, we're just looking at the peer mediation, the peer-to-peer.
I guess what I was thinking was if we were doing this with just most of the groups that come in and say they're doing peer-to-peer educational,
mm-hmm.
this language would not appear there.
That's right.
Because it's not even an
right.
issue.
Right.
Okay.
Right?
Right.
So that's what I was trying to get back to, is like, that's what we're taking them
to
be. If they're trying
consistent.
To do anything else, then they should have, you know, then they would be going through an RFP process with all the other counseling services that we might
mm-hmm.
be
and
hiring.
Mary, you're the sponsor?
Yeah.
And you're okay with that? That's fine?
I think so.
Okay.
I mean, this is the first I saw it, so...
I'm so sorry for that.
That's all right. But my gut reaction thing is yes.
Okay.
I just have to...
That's fine.
But
we could take it out here, and if some seems that we need to put it back in, I'd certainly support an amendment on the floor to put it back in if
mm-hmm.
it turns out that
sure.
it does some harm. I did run it by Ken Cornell quickly, and he thought it was fine.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was a step forward.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Vic took a look at it, too, real fast.
Did it quick. So I would make a motion that we amend as provided in the documents.
Okay. Discussion on the amendment?
Second.
Oh, did you second? Okay. Discussion. All right. So on the amendment?
Aye.
Okay. Aye?
Aye.
Okay. And then on the resolution as amended?
Aye.
Okay. Very good. All right. These are appointments. I don't know if you wanted to, what is it, three of them? Is it three?
Two.
Okay, well then we'll just go through real quick.
Yeah.
Not worth blocking.
Yeah, one's a subcommittee
yeah,
of the
that's
other.
Yep. So we've got a resolution 126 is confirming the appointment of a member to the Community Service Board.
I'll move it.
Second.
Hang on.
Discussion? No? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
All right, we'll move to 127. It's confirming the appointment of a member to the Community Service Board Mental Health Subcommittee.
I'll move it.
Second.
Discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Carry. I'll put this.
I do.
Resolution 129, authorizing the Commissioner of Health to sign annual renewal provider agreement and profile with New York State Department of Health. Continue participation in vaccines for adults program.
I will definitely move it.
Okay. Second?
Second.
Discussion?
Good to give vaccines. Good to have money to do it.
Absolutely. Like what's going on in Rockland right now. It's mm-hmm. not that they're not getting them. It's that yeah. people are refusing them. It's causing an issue. So, all right. Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. Resolution 130, amending the budget to accept an allocation of child abuse or neglect prevention and treatment. Comprehensive Addiction and Recovery Act. These funds are from New York State Office of Children and Family Services.
Move it.
Second.
Second. Discussion?
Very excellent.
Yeah. Pass-throughs. Nice.
Yep.
To get money from other people. All right, good. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All right. 131. Amending the budget to accept allocation of funds from the New York State Office of Temporary and Disability Assistance Support Actions related to the development of homeless service plans.
I'll move it.
Second.
That's fine. All right, discussion? You're squinting. You good?
I'm good.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right, 132.
Glad to have these monies too.
Yeah.
Just not sure whether I should say that on every resolution.
Yeah. Amending the budget to accept funds from the New York State Office of Temporary and Disability Assistance Support Activities associated with sheltering the homeless during inclement weather.
Ditto.
Code Blue plan.
I said ditto.
Ditto.
Yeah. Move it. Yeah.
Second.
All right. Discussion.
Just to say that this is more than we had before because of moving to a new site.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Nice to request it and get this money as well.
Sure.
Do you know if any of this goes towards our veterans too, or do they have separate funding for them?
I don't think any of this goes to them.
I think
although the veterans can use the warming center if they choose that rather than the veterans housing and things that are prepared for specifically for them.
All righty. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. Very good. We will move on to new business.
Julius,
I put a check somewhere.
Please.
So they all
come
and
come back to you.
Thank you, sir.
Is there any new business?
Yeah, I know that Laura had some stuff to discuss.
Yeah, Laura's got some stuff going on.
Yes. You're checking on me.
So
you're on.
Yeah. One I'm just going to set aside, that was the needs assessment for the daycare. It seems that Ulster County has sufficient child care. That they have no waiting list. I don't know if anybody, I know, this says something completely the opposite, but according to social services, they have enough facilities, they have no waiting list, and someone with five kids can make up to $59,000 and get help.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if it's little known, because honestly, I was under the impression that that's very often why the parents have to stay home, is because of the daycare. You know, my daughter stayed home. She was only going to make $12 or $14 an hour. That's what she would have paid to have the two boys.
Yeah.
But I think one of the issues is, like, if you have one child, like, if you work at United Healthcare, for example, you make too much. Because I have parents there that, you know, I don't accept it anyway, but they make too much. So.
Yes, I think we've got to look into it a little bit more. Quite honestly, but you know, this was just some food for thought. And yeah, maybe if you have a large family, then you know it goes up incrementally. But if you make 29, I mean, that's a lot to put out $10 or $15 an hour to have your kid. I mean, that's what you're making.
It's everything that you make.
Yes. Yeah.
Daycare is expensive.
You know.
Yeah.
And I'd like to roll around some ideas.
I loved it.
Is there a way for us to get an additional funding?
Yeah. Crazy.
To have some sort of stipend for somebody who's on services, who wants to go back to work, and or open a daycare. If there was so that's where I was going with it.
Mm-hmm.
But so I was just kind of taken aback that she said there's not a problem. So
okay.
The other thing was RCAL.
Sure. Just one
second.
And she was willing to come to next month's meeting and
sure.
And talk about
it. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Hmm.
So then if we have any other questions after we read it.
It is, right? Because that's totally opposite of what I thought. You know, and where I was going with it is it's one of the largest budgets in our county. You know, there's just a lot with it. I mean, I was struggling as a single parent, too. You know, and it's hard to get back to work and to buy clothes for work and to make sure the kids had snacks. And it was just, you know, on that tight budget. And daycare was a big one.
Yeah.
I mean, when I finally went back to work, I was making $8 an hour. Well, that's what the daycare cost. So I happened to get on one of the lists. It wasn't
CAP
because I had no child support.
CAP.
But it was a program that I understand they don't have now, and it was a sliding scale. So when my name finally hit it, I was making, I think it was $27 a week for daycare at a licensed daycare facility.
And even CAP was a pilot program.
Yeah. So
I don't even know what it is an hour for the boys. I just know that it's like $1,600 a month, and that's it's just a lot of money.
It is.
You know,
wow.
For
a
while. Yeah.
$100 a day, 50
hour.
A kid.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's
was that $18,000 a year?
Probably.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
But as they get older, I hear the rates go down a bit. So. And they're in a really good place.
That too is higher.
And it's two. Yeah, it's two. My goodness. Yeah, we're lucky that we found somebody who would take both of them.
Yeah.
And at 6 a.m. So not a lot that. A lot of areas that had opened, so.
So I don't want to drop it based on, you know, one person. I'd like to keep looking into it, but it's just, you know, something that's really near and dear.
If she comes next month, we can think about what we want to ask her.
Yeah, ask more questions.
Do you know who she is?
Maria Ruffner.
Ruffner?
She's head of a daycare union. She's head of something else, too, she was telling me.
Okay.
From my discussions, what I've seen for quite a while is the problem is how much you make being a cutoff to where you couldn't get in. And then when you find a job, you got to find a very good job in order to be able to afford it, eat, and get to work at the same time. That's been a problem as far as I know. Many of the people that the only reason I can think where there wouldn't be a problem is because those folks aren't really fussing. They're just not going to work.
Well, you know, and that's part of the issue with finding daycare when you have subsidy is if you don't go to work, you don't get paid. So if you have private pay people, they're paying for the spot, but the county doesn't pay for the spot. They only pay if you're at work.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're dropping off later or earlier, and if you're watching somebody's kids, I don't know where you went when you leave.
No.
I can find out the next month that it wasn't work.
It's very similar to the healthcare is that people they kind of get lost in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
Either you can afford the premiums or you make too much in order to for the subsidy, and there's just those people who are stuck in the middle or you know get hit over the head. So yeah.
And also Heidi Jo Brandt is a CSEA daycare union.
Mm-hmm.
Rep for this area, so she would come next week, next month too.
If that's all right with you,
if
I don't know what the agenda will look like. Honestly, I thought there were only three resolutions on it. That's why I said it's a short agenda.
Yeah.
But
no, that's
it
fine.
Wasn't awful. But yeah, I'd really like to look into it because if there's something that we can do as policymakers, and if there's certainly if there's funding or letters that can be written,
sure.
I think that would make a big difference. You know, it's this hamster wheel that you get on, and you
mm-hmm.
really can't get off because you're so heavily penalized. You know, when you try to go out and find work, you know, because it's not just the daycare. You're also losing food benefits and HEAP and, you know, housing subsidies and everything else. So.
Sure.
In truth, that's the drawback across the board.
Yeah.
want me to get a job.
So there's no, yeah, there's
but
no incentive.
If I get a job, I go and get a job that does not pay survival money.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not careful, you end up cutting off the help that I was getting, which does not make it worthwhile.
And sometimes it's only by a couple of dollars.
Yeah.
All of those things are,
you get trapped.
Have been a problem for years.
Mm-hmm.
Because you say you're encouraging people to get a job, but in the same process, your means of encouraging, so fine, you go get this. If I get a job that actually says I can get there, I can take care of my family a bit, then it's not so bad. If the system says it goes down and there's a sliding scale,
mm-hmm.
But the way the system reads, if you make $2, it's
yeah.
too much money. Your $2
yeah.
too much money, and the whole system dumps you. You're
yeah.
out.
Yeah.
So, which is not an encouragement to go
yeah.
get a job.
And the whole
yeah.
system is you take it all or nothing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much. So
yeah. all of that is
no
are things that when you look at the system,
mm-hmm.
modifying the system to where there is assistance. Say monitor assistance so that at a certain point I drop you $60 or whatever because you do have a job. At another point I drop this, but I can't just jerk it all out because
mm-hmm.
yeah.
unless you go to work on Wall Street,
mm-hmm. Not working.
It doesn't cover.
Yeah. I hear this all the time, especially
yeah.
like in the disabled community that there's people that just want to work. They want to work, but they can't because some of them have 24/7 care that there's no way that they could afford it on their own. And then, you know, I know there's programs out there that allow you to make a little bit of money, but at the same time, it's still not enough to have a quality, independent type lifestyle. And they're stuck. They're stuck because it's you don't want to choose between, you know, medication and care and stuff like that, and going out and having even a part-time job. So something's got to change.
And can we do that at the county level? I mean, it's my understanding that we have to follow state regs, but
yeah.
we can.
Yeah, it's all those shared programs.
Yeah. Both federal and state really are the levels at which the funds come in where you could think about reallocating them to this.
Mm-hmm.
At the county, we don't have, you know, without increasing taxes, where would the funds come from to do that at this level?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there are some good programs out there. There's
mm-hmm.
like one, it's called the Medicaid Buy-In Program,
mm-hmm.
and that's for working people with disabilities where they're allowed to, I think the threshold is about like $60,000-$65,000, which is pretty good
yeah.
Without a threat of their losing their services.
Mm-hmm.
It, usually Medicaid, and it's Medicaid that's used mostly for like long-term managed care,
mm-hmm.
Nursing or other CNA assistance, stuff like that. And then there's a 1619B, which is very similar to that, and I think the threshold's a little bit lower. But that's for people who have, like, permanent disabilities that are defined by the SSA.
Mm-hmm.
So, but there are programs out there. A lot of people aren't aware. But at the same time, you know, it's tough in order to be able to make enough and, you know, balance out those bills on the... on your needs. So
I think grassroots study statistics put together and awareness. When we become aware of what's actually going on, when we put it on paper, on computer, and we more or less force the issue to where now the state, all of the counties are looking and studying and putting all the statistics together, the reasons and the things together,
mm-hmm.
and we issue that to the state, and we begin to issue the information to the people, then it becomes one of those issues to where somebody's got to act sooner or later.
Hmm.
And if the state did the same type of work,
mm-hmm.
when we present that on a federal level and start more or less holding people accountable.
Because sometimes you do a pilot program, they do pilot programs in different, like that CAP program was a state pilot program.
You got to put it out there.
But they didn't keep it.
And then, well, I think when you look at some of that, the amount of statistics that were presented to prove that it worked or it didn't work, the type of changes that could have been made to make it work, we didn't get enough study into it in order to present it in such a way to where this program is good, but it needs.
Mm-hmm.
The same way we're talking about Social Security and we talk about social services, all of those things are things that we talk about, but the statistics that it takes to make somebody truly take notice, because we took total notice. We haven't gotten all of that to the proper places, and that's what it takes for us to start doing. I believe we're growing to that point to where we're paying more attention, and we realize that without data, you can't push anything. I can't just say it doesn't work because I got to have some data to back that up, so that when I present it, one, I'm standing there talking from a solid platform,
mm-hmm.
and I've got people around me that understand it the same way, that are talking from a solid platform, then there's more pressure on people to act. Those state folks that come down here looking, here's the statistics, what have you done? How have we done? So I think all of that becomes an issue to where I think we can do more than we think we can do.
One of the things that is a problem is that the automation and change in the availability of jobs is affecting people across the board as well. And so one thing that might be interesting to look at would be if people could volunteer and document volunteer hours, if they could somehow get credit. They're not getting any money, but they are building self-esteem and job skills.
Mm-hmm.
And if that could somehow be acknowledged, either with increase in benefits to allow that to happen, or, I'm just sitting here thinking, the cycles we go through. We had Head Start, and people could have a child in Head Start at 3 years of age. Then that's child care.
Now they take them. They take infants too.
Yeah, that's right. Down to 18 months, right?
I think even infants.
Mm-hmm. So, we've let those programs that were fulfilling a need go away, and then we blame people, look down on people for not having a job that those programs used to enable, and so on.
This is a matter of fact.
Programs with very good outcomes for the children.
I don't think our Head Starts are totally full, because I think part of it is that the school system's pre-K programs are pulling some of the older kids, and I think that's why they're doing some of the younger kids.
So we still have Head Start programs that are.
Mm-hmm.
Running here.
Yep, there's one in Kingston, there's one in Saugerties.
Well, that may be why we're getting, statistics to say that we have available.
Is there one in Elville? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But you always run into the same, hey, do you make any money? How much money do you make? And it doesn't make any difference whether you're 50 cents over.
Well,
$20 over.
But what everybody misses, the big picture of that is especially in some families, the difference in the outcome of that child being exposed to early education so those kids that might have been fast-tracked for being, we were paying for them in jail or other bad things because they didn't get the
treatment, the
sooner
resources,
you do that, that's where we need to change our mindset and invest in them when they're really young. But it means we have to be paying young and where we're at now, because we already have those problems. And as they move up, that age group will have a lower number.
Across the board.
Mm-hmm.
I got 17 grandchildren.
Yeah.
Okay. Those grandchildren that I have to say the family paid to go through preschool. Started preschool at 3 years old. Okay, the family paid to get them through. Okay, those kids are going through school like that.
Mm-hmm.
One or two that missed it.
Not as good.
Really?
Struggle.
It just gives them such a strong foundation on so many levels. Mm-hmm. So many levels.
But the school and the pre-K makes a difference. Because even there, that's early. And then it's what parents do before there.
Mm-hmm.
By the time they got ready to go to preschool, some things they already knew because that's what you've been playing mm-hmm. with all the time. But it's like having that pre-education before anybody's thinking about it.
And if you're in a good daycare, that mm-hmm. developmental things are from, like, some of the kids I get are 6 weeks. So you're starting from, you know, you have the whole time to really invest in them.
I know that New York was pushing for that, for the universal.
They are,
daycare.
But I'm not, well, not for daycare, for at schools.
Oh, well,
now
universal,
they're
pre-K,
at school.
Right?
For 5 or 6 hours.
Yeah.
And the thing I don't like about that is, for me, the early education is about relationship. So you have a person that cares about you, that is teaching you, and that's why I'm not a giant fan of centers. And some centers do this, the infants, the caregiver moves up with them and then they rotate back around.
Yeah.
But some of these poor kids have so many different caregivers and stuff, they don't develop that bond where, you know, so I think that sometimes when you're getting thrown into the school, it's too, you don't have that same benefit.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's better than nothing, but.
Social, becoming a social-minded person begins there. Out of my grandchildren that are here, and the little people in Worstboro. They all went to Land of the Little People. And their ability to relate to other children and even to relate to different adults
mm-hmm.
started in that school. Mm-hmm. And growing up and to where you learn to play, you learn not to fight. You learn to share.
Mm-hmm.
You learn a lot of things that develop a person.
Mm-hmm.
Those kids that don't have any of that kind of relationship, you grow up somewhat selfish.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know how to share. You don't know how to relate to the next kid. When that next kid comes in, there's a problem. So schooling is all important. And we need to figure out a way to where it's there. Everybody just can't afford.
There you go.
And when you have to pay for it, none of it's cheap.
Mm-hmm.
None of it's cheap. Unless somebody that'll watch them and change the diapers.
And ironically,
cost money, let alone if
but ironically,
to
there's not once
yeah.
all is said and done with all your expenses and stuff, you don't make much money in daycare. You know, then your employees don't. You can't afford to pay a high wage, so it's, you know.
But that's
the
yeah.
cost.
Those are
yeah.
Well,
it's all the cost.
Right.
I guess
yeah.
it's like in schools, you're not careful. The first people that get hit are the younger ones when you start moving programs. The younger kids are the first ones to lose. When you talk about a school psychologist, the first one that's lost.
Mm-hmm.
Is in the elementary school. And then, so by the time all this junk that comes in, the heads that are messed up and all of that, you're dealing with those when they get to middle school.
Mm-hmm.
And it's late. It's too late. So all of those things are things that I think when it comes down to how we spread the money and what we think is important, if you don't touch them when they're young, you're going to pay for it when they're old enough. And most of us that have been to school for anything know if you don't get their mindset some kind of way between 7 and 8, you're in trouble, because it takes something real rough to change them after that.
Oh yeah.
So.
And even at that point, is already you're already kind of losing it.
Look, three or four.
Mm-hmm.
In this day, they already have a mindset of what they want to do and what they don't want to do at 3 or 4 years old. So if there hasn't been some
or
bending,
one in Craig's house.
Yeah, I've got 11-month-old that says no.
They're born with those personalities, though. You just sort of have to tweak it a little bit.
No. He's smiling when he's saying no. And I'm hoping he doesn't know what he's saying no to yet.
I know.
He picked up on that quickly.
No, if there isn't somebody or something that's bending that, showing the difference.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Now, after he hits that 5-year-old mark.
And kids don't feel safe. They'll push until you stop them. So if you don't, like, set your boundaries, they're just going to keep going until they can get stopped. So
I think that just brings us to the point to where our attention is sometimes misfocused. We're looking at the wrong end of the stick.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And it's rough. When we talk about public health, when we talk about social, we need to be talking about from birth,
mm-hmm,
up, I say, past the middle school. If you've got it in by then, most of it is going to stay.
Well, and I think all the kids should be tested. It should be mandatory testing. They should all be
mm-hmm.
tested.
Yeah.
Just a baseline thing. Because, you know, when the kids go to the doctors, by the time they go, you see them for 2 minutes. Like, I have them for 50 hours a week.
Yeah.
So I've noticed things and had the mm-hmm. doctor say.
Well,
and then, sure enough, when they get into school,
mm-hmm.
have to stay
or
back.
How about
they
when
have
they
to
get
do
in
the
school,
whole
they
thing.
Send them
it's
to, like, 6 different people because the teacher says, well, I can understand them. And yet, 3 doctors have said that, you know, my grandson needs speech therapy. It's really kind of, I don't know if it's monetary. They don't want to spend the money. I can't figure
See,
it out.
I've been dealing with that for 20-some odd years.
Yeah.
But if you pay for it in the very beginning.
They're in preschool. Kids barely walking.
Right.
And somebody's saying they have a speech problem. And all of that, if you know anything about growing kids, it depends on how much you talk to your child.
Mm-hmm.
You talk to your child on a daily basis like he's a human instead of ga 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 ga.
Mm-hmm.
He learns to talk and
yeah.
he begins to talk.
Mm-hmm.
If you baby him like he doesn't know anything, he grows up that way. And when he decides that he's going to open his mouth and talk,
yeah.
he talks like you talk to him.
Yeah.
But those kids that have been talked to all their life, like they were growing up, like they were something. Those kids take it pretty easy.
Mm-hmm.
There may be some with a slow tongue or whatever that have a problem.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't know that when that child is 2 or 3 years old. Okay. All of those things have been issues we've been fussing over for a long time. Because I couldn't understand. You got a special education kid before he ever even gets close to the school door. And it's about talking. It's not about any physical problem. It's about his ability to communicate.
Yeah.
But sometimes it is like a physical thing that, like, if you knew what
mm-hmm.
to do, you could nip it. Like the W sitting and
mm-hmm.
the towing.
Mm-hmm.
People don't realize
yeah.
that's...
You,
mm-hmm.
It's worth bringing in the diagnostic services and the intervention services, even if you give them to some kids that don't need them, or if you're supplementing for lack of parental engagement. Having at least a few hours of special attention or special classes can remediate that to some extent.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we all agree
document
on
it.
Hmm?
Even if you just document it,
yes,
so that people know what to watch for, because
it
most people think W-sitting is really not a big deal, or towing is not a big deal, but all together, it's issues that could be, if you take care of that when they're 2, it's very hard to change by the time they're 7 or 8.
That, speech, vision, all of those things, the earlier, the social impediments. So I think
you know, focusing on daycare is a good entry point. And if we're going to have somebody come next month, then we can all look at what our questions are and try to look at it again. And really look at this question of what services are available and whether it's really doing, you know, where are the gaps or...
Why is there no waiting list? There should be. Because according to that report, there's 30,000 kids that are age appropriate for daycare.
When I was taking subsidy, there would be people would go on the waiting list and I would watch them for 6 years and there was no movement on the list years ago. So in some ways, I'm glad there's not a waiting list. But not if it's because people aren't using it.
All right. Did we solve it?
Good discussion.
Discussion was great. Now we need to come and see if there's any actions
we can do
to come up with, too.
Definitely.
So, and
I agree.
There's RCAL.
Yeah, RCAL. Actually, that's a good transition because it's a great organization that provides not just education, but services for people who, have various disabilities, and they're great. Actually, I'm glad we get to discuss them tonight.
Yeah,
I've been on their board of directors for not quite a year now, so I've learned a lot with them in a hurry. And
so much going on.
Oh my God, it's just so much. It's so much. It was actually pretty overwhelming. I spend a lot of my time at night, you know, just going over some of the programs that they have to offer. And, and Anthony is great, the director there. He's a wealth of knowledge. And if anybody ever has a question regarding services available, like, he's the go-to guy because he knows, and it's all in his head, like, right off the top of his head. The guy's great. So it's a great organization, and I know that Laura is looking to... help them out the best we can.
I've met with them a couple times, and we actually do have RCAL people come into the town of New Paltz to volunteer. I was kind of, you know, knowing that they need a program where they can really get some good work skills. I actually had a young man sit at the window and greet customers, and, you know, I was there to help out, but he did very, very well. So, and that's what they're looking at. You know, initially they were putting together like some boxes or counting reflectors, or, you know, it's kind of a shame. That's why, you know, something like the proposed medical shed, where it would be open 5 days a week, not only assists in training and giving them, you know, retail, vocation, whatever types of skills, but it also benefits the community, because now instead of having a couple hours on a Friday or having to go in the office and hope there's somebody there to help you, they would be open longer. It's free, so it's not like we're supporting a retail business. The medical supplies, I mean, if you want to give a donation, that's great. But, you know, so I had Anthony put together a proposal for the program, which would include a classroom, two offices, and I think 5 computer workstations. We're not paying for that. We are paying for, you know, the administrative part of it.
Right.
So... that's it. I don't know if you have questions. Anthony did come in and kind of give us an overview of what they were doing.
Back to December.
So are you envisioning this as a sole source funding proposal?
I don't. I mean, I'm sure he'd love to have us fund him every year. But to get the program up and started, that's what the $30,000 would be for. You know, I can certainly encourage him to continue to put in through whatever process we have. And I'm not sure I even understand that process. I guess somewhere towards July or August.
Well, maybe I just missed it because you just mentioned a figure of $30,000 and the description here says cost of $200,000 a year.
Yeah, that's the program as it is now. The additional $30,000 would build out the program so they could get into that building. It would offer 2 part-time people.
So what is the $30,000 just a certain percentage of the overall $200,000, and or how does it get broken down?
It would bring on 2 more part-time people to help with the program to keep it open 5 days a week.
At $15,000 a year each for 1 year?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's administrative salaries, right?
And the justification for coming to the county for this rather than going to the Dyson Foundation or Robert Wood Johnson?
He is brilliant with grants and asking for money and moving things around and getting volunteers. So I can confidently say he's done it, all that. You may know better. But
no, he has. And,
yeah.
And kind of the idea behind it was that we almost wanted to go to him because of what... how
we want to provide this.
Absolutely, because of how well they do. And you know, and like Laura had mentioned, you know, grant-wise, he's very good and very efficient, and they all are over there. But he's provided, RCAL has provided such a tremendous service to those in Ulster County. They have actually, I don't recall when they've ever really approached us for anything significant, if at any.
Yeah.
So
we already have a contract with them, don't we?
We have, we have a contract. I'm trying to think what it is, but it's...
I think it's about at this level.
Significant. I didn't think
it is, and I think it helps them
the
do what they're doing now. And I
sure.
think his answer. So I don't think we need to call him. I mean, you can if you want, but
okay.
I think his answer was that this would allow this expansion,
mm-hmm.
and perhaps you know that's fine. I'm just trying to get it into a category in my head whether we look at what he's already getting and
mm-hmm.
think about expanding,
mm-hmm.
you know, adding to that, expanding
sure.
that. Or and exactly what kind of funding streams we have for something like this.
Right.
So maybe we can ask the executive's office, you know, if they can help in terms of looking for additional funding for this.
I'd be interested to see that contract too, because I think it predates my time here in the legislature.
Yeah, I don't think you attended that meeting where he was.
Oh no, I was there.
That was one of the ones I.
It was our December meeting. I think it was on the 6th, December 6th.
Okay.
Yeah,
we had a couple different people there.
Mm-hmm. Want me to get the binder in the car?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but if we can find that contract, I'll speak
okay.
to Anthony as well.
He didn't mention it. He said he's never put in through our regular contractual process, which again,
yeah.
I think is July or August,
yeah.
From outside organizations like the SPCA. Or
mm-hmm. I guess that's what I'm trying to figure out. Is he asking for this to go in that process this year?
Because that wouldn't be till next year. I think he'd like to get it off the ground this year.
Right.
But, I mean, if we can't, we'll get him in for next year, but...
I don't know how the budget is going to be for this
that's
year.
That's it.
Sure.
Yeah. And we do have legislative contingency.
Right.
And everybody takes a breath.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
which
did
is
you see that?
For
two of them.
Emergency
right.
needs.
Right.
And
but what if we don't use it, should we keep asking for it for the taxpayers to?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yes.
You never know.
I think
when
it's
the
shoe's
gonna drop.
Yeah. Don't
it's
know what's going to happen.
There,
and that's why it's
every
there.
Budget you can think of.
But that's
it's
reserves.
Sitting there somewhere.
We have reserves for that. The contingencies, mm-hmm. legislative programs.
Yeah, but legislative needs might be urgent as well. We just expended for a consultant on for an information services evaluation. There could be other things that come up that seem to require an urgent attention. Creation of a new mechanism for dealing with Me Too complaints,
mm-hmm.
For example. And this, I think, when he came in December, he had just missed, you know, a budget cycle.
Yeah.
And now, to come back now and say, well, let's do it, I think
mm-hmm.
this is still
yeah.
that he
and
missed that last budget cycle.
Him. So
he wants to get
sure,
it.
Yeah, no, definitely, it's not his nature.
He wants to get this open, and I understand that.
No, absolutely, but you know, we have to take it at the right pace and make sure that you know, we have the means available. And yeah, like everybody, a couple of us did.
That
deep breath.
Right?
But,
you take time to
right, yeah, exactly. So, but
okay then.
Yeah.
But we could talk with the chair, and we could talk with the executive's office, and see if
absolutely.
There are ways that we can, without leaving ourselves in a precarious position.
Yep. Agreed.
Try to move this forward. I think we all agree that it's a great program.
It is a good program.
Right place to do something more if we have some funding to do.
And there's really nothing like that. I think there's a couple in Dutchess, maybe two in Dutchess. We have a little shed in New Paltz, but it's a pittance, and we never have wheelchairs and very rarely have walkers. You know, a lot of canes, but, and they've got the full everything from adult diapers to an $8,000 wheelchair.
They do. Often they'll have... they'll have a surplus of items where they don't have room for it, and they sent them to Puerto Rico, I think. And they shipped them there at their expense, and it was, they're just a really, really good group. So all of that would help. Any kind of expansion would help, and the program would be great. So, all right, but we'll discuss that. And anything else?
And he didn't get back to us.
Old business? In terms of the marijuana, I have talked with a couple of people about ways to think about doing some enhanced outreach education about marijuana, especially in the context of the New York State potentially liberalizing. The opioid use and prevention task force is moving towards completion of its report, and it's mainly addresses opioids, but along the way also addresses marijuana and other substance use. Well, in the conversation, in the meetings that I was in, there were discussions of that. Pardon?
You said you wanted to talk about it.
Yeah, it may not be in the final draft. I haven't seen that at all.
Just aside, 2018, they just came out with a report on the data from 2016. We had the highest rate of opioid deaths in New York State. 52 people died. 2017, 43 people died. 2018, first half, 27 died. So we're back looking at 50. Overall, in 2.5 years, 122 people died.
I did, I hadn't thought about mentioning this, but I should have, I guess. I attended a buprenorphine training for clinicians, to which the Department of Health organized with staff from the Family Practice Institute. And I'm not a prescribing physician for treating, but I felt that in order to do this work well, I really needed to know more about buprenorphine, which is a medication that helps people function by partially stimulating the opioid receptors in the brain so that they don't have cravings, but they don't get a high. And this has, there's very good research to show that people in these kinds of programs using this agent go back to work, maintain their relationships. But what came out at this meeting is we are very, very short on clinicians who can prescribe. Ellenville has a good program, but they need more people.
Is it the Vivitrol?
No, Vivitrol is a total agonist. So what Vivitrol does is just basically deprive you of any high, but it doesn't, and it will somewhat deal with the cravings, but it leaves you more at risk for overriding it by taking more, and that leads to overdose deaths in patients who are trying to get the effect and trying to override. With the buprenorphine or Suboxone, you have the situation where the person feels normal and doesn't crave to go out and get something. And you don't get that same feeling with Vivitrol. So it's, I think it's the real 21st century approach to dealing with somebody who in many cases, some of the people who are overdosing are people who are addicted through their medically prescribed opioids.
Right.
In a pain relief setting, one of the case studies at this seminar was a teacher who was prescribed and in the setting of a back pain and got addicted and won't go to a methadone clinic because that ruins the reputation. I mean, you've seen there. And doesn't want to use, had been in treatment multiple times, even inpatient treatment, and just was not succeeding without this agent. So it's not the cure-all in itself, but the county is looking for all the gaps, and one of the gaps is that there are people who want this type of assistance in at least stabilizing their lives so they're not overdosing or losing their jobs. The other harmful things that come from drug use that is with active cravings. So one of the things I think that we need to be doing is working with the schools on education. And that, again, is one of these things where it would be helpful if it were a federal or state initiative where we had some funding coming in to do that. But in the absence of that, maybe we can see what we can try to
do. I think you really should inform parents that their kids are in danger of using in schools.
I think that they have been informed, and
I think individual school districts have been. I know Saugerties just had something.
Yeah, Auntie Aura has had multiple times.
I was at that one in Ellenville with them.
I think you're concerned that people aren't aware enough. I take that, but I don't think it's awareness. I think it's that we lack interventions, and part of that is because it's such a multifactorial press of causes that cause children to experiment and then actually to get into drug using culture.
Well, personally, I don't believe that a parent of a middle school child knows the danger their kid is going into in high school.
Well, there's billboards all along Route 28.
Yeah, but I think
there's stuff
but
in the newspaper every week.
No, I agree.
The weekly papers.
Though. No, but I agree. I think that, especially with marijuana, a lot of people did it in high school that have kids now.
Yeah.
And don't see that as an issue.
Yeah.
So, but I think the some of it's stronger, but I think the availability of drugs has expanded where these, I mean, when I was in seventh grade, I'm sure there might have been pot around, but there was nothing else you weren't looking at. And I think it's just becoming so available that, because I've talked to people and they're just like, you know, I smoke pot in school, so they're not a big deal. But it is a big deal because it's much.
So you think it's serving more as a gateway drug now than it did in the past because the other agents are so much more easily
available? Yeah, I do.
It's a gateway attitude.
I do.
It's a gateway attitude.
Uh-huh.
Get high instead.
Uh-huh.
Along with all the other
pressures. But I don't think the average parents know one of the worst counties
just a lot more
around for marijuana.
But I think it's just like some folks are looking at it legalizing. I don't smoke today because I could smoke at home whenever I wanted to as a teenager in school.
Mm-hmm.
So it never became a challenge. You couldn't take me out and say, you ought to try this because blah, blah, blah. No, I can go home, sit in my living room with my parents and smoke, and it's no problem. Consequently, never smoked. Okay. Same thing with alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
Gonna have a drink, you can have a drink right here in this house, and I just don't want to catch you out there nowhere with a drink, but you can drink all you want to drink right here in this house. Never became a challenge, never became an alcoholic, okay, never got excited over alcohol. I think marijuana is sometimes, many people look at it as just that. It's a big fuss about it, this, that, and the other, over that, people are getting in major trouble over it, but if it's legal, challenge to do it for some won't be the same. For others, it's going to be a nightmare. Because,
check out Colorado.
You know, so all of that is a problem. The study of why and how is more important now than anything because you never know which one of those children is going to react to it what way. So some is going to just let them sit back and say, okay, fine, there's no don't have to sneak no more. Okay. For others, it's going to open up a gate and they're going to do what they want to do. And the problem is that one high leads to wanting a bigger high. The marijuana gets X me one place and there comes a point where it doesn't take me where I want to go. Now I'm moving on to something else.
And honestly, the way the world is right now, there's good reason for people to want to escape. You know, so I think there's also other contributing factors with the world that are making people not want to deal with their current situation.
Well, why don't we do this? Why don't we each bring the research that we think will be most helpful to looking at this problem? You know, because some of what I've been looking at is the different addictive qualities of different agents. And on that, marijuana is not as physically addictive. We've talked about that here. It is can be psychologically or kind of socially addictive. But let's bring in some research and start sharing with each other so that we could, you know, do self-education as a first step.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the problem is big. The actions that I see taking, I want to have founded on, you know, evidence of real efficacy. And for right now, buprenorphine has that. The studies that are done out of Yale are really very, very good. And it's unfortunate it's kind of after the fact, but at least it's something. And so the county is making some efforts. I mean, organizing this workshop and getting, you know, six new additional clinicians who can prescribe this can... I'm hoping that will affect those mortality statistics you're talking about there. That and the Narcan trainings, which are also fantastic. And I believe, although I don't have any evidence to prove it, but I believe the Narcan trainings may have an effect on initial use. But people are showing up at the Narcan trainings and saying that anyway, that they're bringing... They're family members of drug users who come to the Narcan training and take the Narcan kit home and give it to their loved one who's using and have the loved one say, well, I'm going into treatment. Because you're basically saying, I'm having,
That first class I sponsored was all either a parent or a close friend that was there together.
Yeah, same with me.
Yeah, a lot of parents.
The one that I had sponsored. You know, and the Narcan kit isn't necessarily for, it's not for the addict, it's for the parent that comes home and finds the addict on the floor.
Yes.
So, and we were giving them away mostly to parents and loved ones. And
yeah.
I don't know if we had a handful of people, of users there, I'd be surprised. But it's mostly concerned relatives and friends and loved ones. So, yeah.
I agree.
Yeah.
But it's got to shake you up a little bit to know that your loved one has gone to a Narcan training.
Oh, yeah. No,
right?
I would think so.
I mean, it brings it home
a little bit,
the danger is.
A little bit, but I think sometimes you're just at the point where that doesn't even, you know what I mean?
Well,
where you're so shut down sometimes,
yeah.
you don't even.
Yeah. They're like, I would hate that some of them would look at it as a second chance. You know, and
but
that's.
You know what's really encouraging is. On Facebook, there's a group called The Addict's Diary,
mm-hmm.
and this young man went through the whole thing, and through his treatment, he started keeping a diary, and he, you know, at first, all the stories were really, like, loss, like mothers losing their kids, and it was horrible, but the trend right now is a picture of them really bad,
uh-huh.
and how they are today, and some of them are in within a year. And some of them like 3 years, but like, and all, and their story about what it did for them, like why they, what clicked with them.
You know, this reminds me of one other thing, which is that one of the key elements is how early you get exposed. And that reminded me of T21, and I heard just as I was on the way here that the governor has signed into effect a New York statewide tobacco 21 law.
Yeah. So we get to repeal ours then, right?
That we if you would like.
And
the plastic bag law.
And the plastic bag, but yeah. I'm looking forward to it, actually.
No, it's just Ulster County leading again.
Yeah.
I mean, and I think it does help when you're trying to get something done at the state level that counties have already tried it.
So that's why we're trying to one-up them with all this other stuff.
You bet.
Yeah.
They're going to beat us on the marijuana.
We have an opt-out option, but then again, I think that's gonna you don't get the revenues either. My goodness! But then you got to think: are you putting money
that's right.
ahead
we're already
of the
number
taking
one.
The
revenues and putting it ahead?
Yes, we already are number one.
And
ask Tom.
What's going to cost us?
Yeah.
Well, that's my point. Illegal hasn't worked too much on this.
Yeah.
And Massachusetts does not recommend it being a recreational drug. They had it is a recreational drug now, but they said that was not one of their better moments.
Yeah.
So
I like the medicinal
purposes.
I like
yeah.
that.
Absolutely.
The doctor looks at you and says, "This might be a real deal." That's
right.
One thing.
Yeah.
I think introducing our young people to the opportunity
yourself medicated.
Of taking something that is somewhat psychotic can affect you that way.
And you still can lose your job. It doesn't matter if it's illegal. If you get drug tested and you're positive.
Yeah, I just saw that the field drug test for marijuana in Colorado.
And more about how it affects your head.
Yeah.
Right. No, that, well, you can't
talk about obesity.
Early, LSD and all those things twisted your head.
Yeah.
It's been proven that marijuana does that to young folk.
Mm-hmm. Well, especially.
They're still developing.
Yeah, they're still developing.
According
still
to everything I've read now, so 30 years old, your mind is still developing. This thing can stop it, or turn it around, or twist it. So I'm not really in favor of putting that in front of them,
right.
just to be putting it in front of them.
Right.
So that's, but it's a fight because we're getting to where that's the way we deal with
we're
everything.
We're already accepting it.
You know, you think we got cool because we legalized alcohol. Okay, for some it didn't do nothing. For others, went off the deep end.
Yeah.
Prohibition
just made people lots of money.
Yeah.
So from Al Capone to the Kennedys, right?
I'd like to make a motion to adjourn.
There you go.
When we get to the Al Capone stories, then I'm out.
All in favor?
Aye.